This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott and I'm here with John McPherson, or Mac. How are you, Mac?
I'm bloody good, mate. How are you?
Good, good indeed. We're here in Advintage, which is your shop here in Havelock North, which is in Hawke's Bay.
Yep, we're here in Advintage. We're a wine retailer. We've been wine retailing for 25 years. We've got a big online presence. So we're based here. We have a retail store here, but we mainly sell online around the country.
Excellent. What I want to talk about today is a little bit about that the business of wine. Not just wine from your perspective as a retailer, where you source the wines, the issues you have with regards to that, but also I want to get a feel, because when I've been talking to various winemakers, they have a story to tell, but sometimes their story is always focused on giving themselves the best possible wine.
Yeah, well, winemakers are never going to say that their kids are ugly, are they?
No, it's true. It's true, isn't it? Absolutely, absolutely. So let's start off with the New Zealand retail situation.
Yep.
So you are a reasonably successful online retailer and you have a single store in Havelock North.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about opening a second store somewhere?
Well, not really, because, I mean, the internet gives you reach, right? And so we started e-tailing back in 2000, so we've been doing it for 26 years now. And so our theory was, why recreate another store? We can sell the volume we need to run a successful business online.
Is it mainly a retail e-tailing business with a store tapped on the side, or is it?
I sort of think we're a marketing company that sells wine. But it's really sad, like, you know, in 25 years, so many of the independents that used to be competitors or friendly competitors of ours have gone. And so the market's changed dramatically. There's only about 6 sizable businesses like Advintage left in the country. And then we have the banner chains, which are like your traditional off-premise, you know, selling beer, spirit.
Liquorland.
Liquorlands and all those sorts of things. They have a very non-discerning wine choice. It's very, very much a mirror image of what grocery's doing. They might have one or two little things of interest, but the vast majority of it is just whatever the supermarket data is telling them what the best-selling wines are. And without being too disparaging, not that much passion for the product involved in a lot of those businesses. It's just a commodity they're selling. Yeah. And then, of course, the industry is dominated by the two grocery chains. Well, that's Progressive and Foodstuffs, which are the two owners of the brands they sell, the supermarket brands they operate, and they are far and away the dominant force of wine retail in New Zealand. And like in the UK, for example, you have Masters of Wine running the programs. They're very, very discerning buyers. Sadly, it's not the same thing here in New Zealand. A lot of the purchasing is done by people with very, very little knowledge or passion for the industry. They're just buying what the data is telling them is selling.
Yeah, which isn't a bad idea, but it doesn't give you the opportunity to move into new areas. You sort of get pigeonholed.
Yeah. Well, it becomes very much, you know, like singing from the same song sheet continually, and harder for small brands to get exposure in that channel. Both of the supermarket chains are significantly cutting their ranges, and they're making it much, much harder for local stores to buy from local providers on a one-off basis. And so it's just taking the colour out of the industry. You know, if you're a wine lover and you want to be depressed, go to a Pack and Save in, you know, regional New Zealand, and it's just like absolute mediocrity and dross.
You say that, but we've been into a few, like Foodstuffs owns a number of brands,
yep.
New World, but they're also in the Foursquare brand as well.
Yeah.
And I've been into some Foursquare brand shops and had a look.
And they're good. Some of them are very good.
Yeah, some of them are actually okay. Compared to the equivalent of a convenience store in the UK, where the offering in those stores is appalling.
It's appalling, yeah.
Whereas I thought the offering, you know, maybe not exciting, but there were some decent wines there.
Sure, New World's a premium brand, and they are definitely the best of the grocery providers. You can't argue with that.
We've got a feeling that the industry is dominated by a couple of big wholesalers who own a number of branded supermarkets and convenience stores and things like that. And you're selling yours around New Zealand through your e-tailing,
yep.
Retailing, and as well as local in Havelock North. One of the things I've noticed when I've been looking at the wines is there's a wine we use in London called Warrow River Sauvignon Blanc.
Yes.
Which is a good, solid...
I agree.
Sauvignon Blanc. It's got some nice fruit, more the tropical fruit spectrum than the sort of greeny fruits. And I've seen it in Four Squares, which is a convenience store, $15 a bottle.
Yeah, we were selling it for $15 last month.
Exactly. But in the UK, it's more like 15 quid.
Yes.
Which is a heck of a price difference.
Heck of a price difference.
And I've been trying to understand where it is, because I thought the cost of shipping to the UK wasn't particularly high if it's done in bulk. It might add another. It used to be a 50p to ship a bottle.
Yeah.
But that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it's probably more like a pound now. And the GST in New Zealand is 10%?
No, 15%.
GST, good services tax, like VAT in England,
yes,
which is 20%. So there's a little bit of difference there. The duty on wine is a little bit high. It's a little bit complicated in the UK for duty, but it's probably around £2.50, £2.60 for that type of wine.
Yeah.
Do you know what the duty rate in New Zealand is?
It's about round figures. You can say it's about $2 a bottle.
$2. Okay, so... I mean, why do you think the prices are so different between the
two? I mean, good luck to them for making that profit. I mean, basically how it works in the New Zealand retail market is that if we buy a bottle of wine, we add GST, and for retailers like us, your markup, your gross markup, not your gross profit, not your markup. There is a difference between gross profit and markup, as I'm sure you know. The gross profit's going to be somewhere between 20 and 25%. For a commercial product like that. That's what we get. I'm not sure what it is in the UK. I imagine it's much the same.
Normally 30 to 40, depending on where it's...
GP.
20-30% markup.
Oh, markup, yeah. There is a difference. So 25% markup is 20% GP. That's a whole different discussion. Mm. So we always deal in GP points here. Hopefully Wairau River's making some good money out of exporting their wines to... the UK. I imagine a business like Wairau River would not be making much money here in the domestic market.
All right, let's talk a wee bit about what's going on in New Zealand in terms of the business. We've been driving around and we were planning on interviewing Milton until we got to Gisborne. We realised they weren't around anymore.
No, right.
There was Tiawonga in the Hawke's Bay who have gone into receivership as well.
Yeah.
And the business hasn't been sold.
Yes.
So there appears to be a few businesses that are not able to sell the business on. Which implies that there's no demand for that type of business.
No, it's become quite tragic, really. I mean, the wine industry is a cruel mistress. If you look at the Hawke's Bay context where I live, the vast majority of the companies which were the founding brands when wine exploded here around the sort of 80s, 90s, early 2000s, the vast majority of those companies have either gone or have are no longer under the same ownership or are struggling. And a lot of the businesses here in Hawke's Bay would struggle for profitability. So it's a real labour of love. You know, I think people have this romantic dream of, you know, you buy a vineyard and you swan around in your Range Rover and oversee the crop and, you know, share some beautiful wines with your friends. But it's a really, really dogged industry and it's very, very hard to reach profit as a producer. Most people struggle. It's becoming increasingly difficult with the global downturn in alcohol consumption. So yeah, I'd like to paint a prettier picture, but even for the Sauvignon producers down in Mulberry, you all would have heard that, you know, a lot of vineyards weren't picked this year. There's an oversupply problem of Mulberry Sauvignon. I think the industry's a fair degree of panic going on. They, of course, don't want that to get out too publicly because it's bad for business.
You don't get an honest answer out of a wine producer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mean, you know, they have to paint a pretty picture. That's the reality of what they're doing. I know that in the local context, Hawke's Bay red wine's becoming harder to sell. Some of the varietals, which were red hot a few years ago, have sort of fallen from grace and are becoming much harder to sell. Chardonnay seems to be going well in the local market, but there's a fair amount of caution, almost trepidation, of where the industry is heading, and everyone's struggling to find ways to bring profit into their businesses. Well, not everyone, but the vast majority, I would say.
Mm. What are the businesses that are successful? What do they look like?
The businesses that are successful have found a way of becoming like a much-loved brand. There's a few good local examples where they've built a strong local brand with really high-quality wines. They've controlled their own distribution largely, so they're not giving away 30% of the retail price to a distribution company. And a few of them find ways either through a very successful restaurant or to sell a large percentage of their inventory at a more attractive price point. The ones who are successful would have very strong in sales marketing teams who are really out there hustling. You know, the wine industry is full of people who can make great product, but a lot of them aren't the best salespeople. And I think that at the moment, if I was being cynical, there's an attitude that the industry's feeling a bit screwed at the moment, but at least we're all in the same boat. Whereas I think if I owned a small wine company and that was me, I would just be constantly travelling, pushing, trying to sell my product. A lot of people, unless you have good distribution, traditionally wine people aren't very good at selling their own product.
Yeah. What's the business model that's struggling the most, do you think? Is it a scale thing? Is it the bigger players, smaller players? Because the way you describe that person who's that industry that's doing well comes across as somewhere like a small to medium-sized company. But you need to have...
You need scale to make it work. And the big guys with scale and great distribution are really, really doing well. Anecdotally, I've heard stories of some of the big brands going into the States where they have whole vintages of Marlborough Sauvignon still unsold, sitting in warehouses. You know, these are some of the biggest New Zealand brands, and so they've chosen not to pick, or they're dropping contracts because they don't want to pay the growers for the grapes this mm-hmm. year. But you know, you get the Oyster Bays, you know, those brands which have just sort of somehow achieved that sort of cult status. I think they will be strong. There's always people who survive in these situations. The ones who are hurting, in my mind, would be the middle to smaller size guys who have been living hand to mouth anyway. And so if you have a situation where globally wine consumption's down, domestically sales in New Zealand have dropped 20% in the last 10 years, I mean, that's a huge number. And so those people are just trying to find ways of A, either exiting, or B, trying to find some profitability.
In terms of exit strategies, are you seeing vineyards being sold, or is it very much people having to hold on to it?
They're having to hold on to it. I have a friend who runs a wonderful little wine brand, which has been, you know, is very, very highly regarded in the New Zealand market. He's getting older now, and he's been trying to sell his small vineyard holding in-house. And the real estate agent, after a couple of years of no success, said, look, if we pull the grapes out, because, you know, the buyers just see it as a liability. Mm-hmm. It's hard times out there. So I'm sure that this story it's a global story. I don't think this is just happening here in New Zealand, you know. From what I read, this is a global problem.
Yeah, it's definitely happening in Australia and America.
Yeah, France.
Bordeaux, they've been grubbing up left, right and centre.
Yeah.
So it's a readjustment, isn't it?
It's a readjustment. For us personally, as for a business like ours, because we're appealing to wine-interested people who are making, I guess, discerning choices rather than market-led decisions, I think we'll manage to sort of survive the storm simply because there'll always be enough people who are interested in wine to come, who seek out wine stores for more information, broader choice, and you know, being able to converse with the staff about the products they're buying.
Do you think price will start to become a factor soon? If you know, you're talking about people with large stocks in markets overseas.
You mean dumping stock?
Yeah, or at least moving the, because New Zealand in the UK, for example, it's the highest average
yes.
bottle price
yeah.
in the UK.
Yes.
You know, France has some very expensive wines, but they've got a lot of really cheap stuff that drags
sure.
their average price down. And New Zealand could certainly move volume if it wanted to. You know, the last time America got into this type of problem in California, they had the $2 chuck come in and just cleared out all the residual stock. And saved the day for a lot of producers by just soaking up vast quantities of stock. But I haven't really seen anybody competing on price.
Yeah, I don't know enough about that market, but I would assume that the companies, primarily talking about Sauvignon, right, because that's what we are, we're a Sauvignon Blanc producer. I imagine that there will be some price adjustments going on, but I don't think many of these companies are making very much money now. So if they start, you know, dumping their stock, it's a hiding to nothing. I don't know how they're going to get out of that.
Yeah, but New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc sells at quite a premium price overseas.
Yeah.
It's a very easy wine to make. You don't need to, you get it, you put it in a tank, you bottle it and you flog it. It's like the cheapest wine to produce.
Couldn't agree more.
Selling at one of the highest price points.
I know.
So how can you not be making money left hand over fist?
Pass, I don't know. Some of our biggest companies are reporting financial difficulties, so it's just not working out. I'm afraid I'm not the person to ask about those details.
Yeah.
The industry is very, very nervous about what's happening at the moment. The big guys, the small guys, everyone. There was an article published in a local magazine asking the question, you know, is there a single Hawke's Bay wine company in profit this year? And of course there will be some. I can think of a few straight off the bat, but it's tough times. Make no bones about it.
What about the difference between, say, a brand owner who makes wine and a grower? Because depending on the contract negotiations, I remember years ago, this is sort of 1980s, 90s, Australia went through a glut.
Yes.
Like the big guys like Jacobs Creek and all those guys, they just dumped all their contractors and the growers. That allowed them to reduce supply very quickly at no cost.
That's happening in Marlborough now.
Is it?
It's already happened in Gisborne back in the day, Montana, which was, you know, a massive exporter to the UK and US.
Brancott Estates is how it's branded. Estate.
They basically just walked away from Gisborne and they owned Gisborne. The big companies make big decisions very quickly. It's just survival of the fittest. And a lot of the stock sold in the UK is like generic second brand stuff. We call it Bullshit Bay. You know, we're just some generic name. It's been sent over in a bladder, probably bottled in France, shipped across to the UK. I mean, that's a massive part of our Sauvignon story in terms of sales in the UK, correct? It's brands you don't see here.
Yeah.
Like whenever I go to, you know, like a general off license in the UK and look at the dump stacks on the floor, most of the Sauvignon brands, I've never seen them before.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot of own label. Although I think the bottling's done in England. There's big
there's
a couple of big bottling plants where a lot of bottling occurs in England. What are the trends you're seeing in the UK and Europe as well is this move to no and low. So no alcohol or low alcohol. So you're getting wines coming in at 7%, 8% or just completely de-alkalized. Are you seeing that here? Or
yes.
And where? Because you need... For de-alkalisation, you need special kit.
Yes.
So is people building the kit? Who's doing it? What's going on?
Some of the producers are now, they have their little centrifugal spinners. Zero alcohol is a fast-growing channel here. It really is growing. And we see significant growth in it. I personally think that the mid-strength is where it's going to land. A lot of the zero alcohol wines that we taste or are offered, I mean, I just don't see them as being particularly attractive. I mean, if I was not choosing not to drink a glass of wine, I don't see any reason to opt for a zero alcohol wine when I could find another beverage which would be far more palatable and enjoyable. To me, it's just like an insipid version of the real thing. There are some good examples, but I mean, I find them generally very unsatisfying. And I don't know why there's the social stigma for people to feel that they must drink an alcohol lookalike if they're to drop the need for flavour or and deliciousness just to be seen to be drinking a wine. I just don't get it.
All right. I agree. I think, the low alcohol wines, I've never had one that I've gone, that's really good.
Yeah,
even the mid-strength ones, they're okay, but they often fill it up with sugar. In the UK, there is a big difference between no alcohol wine in that they're not, it's not classed as wine. It's just a beverage.
Oh, right.
So you're allowed to fill it up with all sorts of stuff. Like wine, if you make a wine, you're not allowed to put gums in or anything like that or any of food additives to give body.
Oh, that's interesting. I wasn't aware of that. Sorry. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Do you see that over here at all?
I haven't seen that personally. I don't know if it could well be happening. It's not something I've been exposed to.
Because the mid palate gets very hollow when you take the alcohol out.
Of course, yeah.
But you can fill it up. And
right.
That's one of the things we're starting to see in the UK over the last year or two is them using different products to fill the mid palate, which, because it's not wine, is perfectly legitimate. It's just a beverage like Coca-Cola, you know,
sure.
From a legal point of view and a regulated point of view.
Yeah, I mean, once again, I just don't see the attraction in it. But yes, it's a growing market. I think, you know, like most wine retailers, you know, because we're in the business, because we love the product so much and, you know, we've chosen this life, the idea of non-alcohol wines is sort of quite abhorrent to us. And so we do have a range and we are going to have to increase it, but not out of any sense of
love.
You know, it's just like something we have to have.
Yeah.
Like it is what it is. Once again, coming back to it, I just don't see the attractiveness in it as a beverage. I've never tasted a glass of non-alcoholic wine where I've gone, oh, I'd like to drink that, regardless of the occasion.
I agree with you. Beer is a product that does seem to be able to produce
yes.
reasonable non-alcoholic yes. beers. And especially, you know, I'm quite happy with 2% beers, you know, as a drink. You can find a nice beer at 2%.
100% you can over here too. And I agree with the beer market. And I think in the New Zealand market for packaged beer, I think non-alcoholic is, when I last heard a number, it was 12%. It's growing and growing and growing. And that number was 2 or 3 years ago. And, you know, I know that, you know, anecdotally, when we go to gatherings with friends of my age group, I would say a third to half of the people there who are drinking beers would be drinking zero beers.
What about spirits? What we're seeing is that there's a move away from alcohol and wine, but there's also a move towards spirits as well.
Yeah, same here. Your craft spirits are huge, have steadily been growing. Unfortunately, I think that's a little model that might eat itself. I think everyone jumped on the gin wagon. My son runs a spirits business. He started creating his own gin. There's almost no barriers to entry. You know, you just need a distillery, an idea for a brand, and some sort of differentiation point, and you can be in business selling gin in 2 weeks' time if you're not having your own distillery. And I think at the moment I heard someone say that the New Zealand craft gin business is producing 3 or 4 times more per annum than we currently sell. So there's going to be some collateral damage there as well, unfortunately.
What about rum? Rum seems to be, in the UK, seems to be coming the next.
Yeah, we read about that 2 or 3 years ago. It hasn't really transposed here. If the independent spirits retailers, it's very much gin-based here in New Zealand. Vodka's still the biggest seller, but they don't tend to be craft vodkas. And again, when I'm talking about these, I'm talking about not the sort of, you know, the baseline big international consortium products. I'm talking about the interesting products produced by New Zealand distilleries and producers.
So it looks like New Zealand's following a lot of the international trends at the moment. The big one on the horizon that seems to be doing quite well, you mentioned rosé, but also sparkling wine.
Yeah, sparkling wine in New Zealand's really starting to make huge progress. There's some wonderful boutique producers now producing absolutely world-class sparklings that could sit at any table with the most discerning palates and receive nods of approval. And I think that's where we have to concentrate for New Zealand as a country. We're a tiny, tiny producer in world scale. I think we're well less than 1% of the world's wine production. So to me, two things have to happen. One, I think it's been the wineries just keep on innovating and producing better products. As a wine retailer, I'm really proud of the industry that we're working in because we have these incredible producers now just completely knocking quality out of the park. They're refining their wines, becoming more interesting, more expressive. I think they're doing an absolutely wonderful job, and I think that's been recognised on the global scale. Even in the UK, some of the more disparaging commentators are now coming across to the fact that we actually produce white wines other than Sauvignon Blancs really, really well. And the calibre of our Bordeaux blends, you know, Merlot Cabernet blends, coming out of Hawke's Bay in particular, absolutely world class. I think that's unequivocal now. Everyone can appreciate that. But the wine guys just have to remember that making it is one thing, they have to be able to sell. And so in the global scale, we're such a little drop in the bucket. I think just a concerted effort and really, really pushing hard in global markets, and we can fix our problems pretty quickly.
All right then, Mac. Cheers very much.
Pleasure. Nice talking to you.